Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Serial Killer Podcast, the podcast dedicated to serial killers. Tonight, I, your humble Norwegian host, Thomas Wyborg Thun, will take you away from the silent halls of the nursing home in Norway and back to the United States of America. In the golden age of serial murder, it was far easier to get away with serial killing than today. DNA forensics were not yet invented, or in its very early infancy. And as such, killers didn't have to worry much about leaving behind semen, hair, skin, blood, or saliva. As such, several serial killers in the late 1960s through to the late 1980s were never caught and still cause fear and anxiety among the neighborhoods they terrorized. Today, almost all serial killers are caught. More than not, budding serial killers are caught before they manage to kill more than one or two victims, due to the advanced methods used by police and investigators. However, there still are killers out there that manage to kill and kill again without being apprehended. The most famous of these contemporary unknown serial killers is the Long Island serial killer. So far, he has killed at least 10, and maybe as many as 16 young women.
I am very fond of doing this show, and I could not do it without you, dear listener. However, even though I, from time to time, have great sponsors, in order to keep the show going, I am very much dependent on my dear patrons. If you enjoy the show, please head on over to patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast. There, you can join the $10 Plus Club, where everyone who donates $10 or more gets 100% exclusive access to bonus episodes and content. Right now, there are 3 such episodes out, and they really add spice to the show. Remember, patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast to support the show and gain exclusive benefits as an official TSK producer.
Thank you. The first thing to notice about Oak Beach is how quiet it is. Even on the brightest days, there's more likely to be residents tending to their yards or their boats than splashing in the ocean. To the east is wild, whispering marshland that seems worlds away from the few cars running right alongside it on Ocean Parkway. Dense vegetation separates a small community from the road, leaving it in a thick, deafening silence. The beach is on the other side of the road. It's usually a chilly and windy place with sandy dunes, topped with tall grass and weeds. This is the place where the story of the Long Island serial killer began. Shannon Gilbert was an attractive young woman with blonde hair. Her lips were enhanced with something, perhaps Botox, making her mouth extra voluptuous. It was around dawn, on a clear spring morning, when she disappeared in Oak Beach, Long Island. It's a secluded, semi-private community at the eastern tip of a narrow barrier island called Jones Beach Island, and is a few miles from the line separating Nassau County from Suffolk. Just 56 kilometers from Manhattan, the town's residents usually commute to the nearby metropolis, and its bleak and rather harsh vistas hardly makes it a popular spot for visitors or tourists. On the night of the 1st of May 2010, Gilbert, a young Craigslist prostitute, had been with Joseph Brewer, a first-time client at his home. Brewer lived near the gated entrance to Oak Beach Association, a modestly upscale collection of a few dozen homes built closely together along narrow roads that descend to the ocean-facing beach. Gilbert, a warm-hearted 24-year-old, raised primarily in foster care, fell into prostitution the same way many women do. An unstable upbringing, an uncertain future, the alternative of earning less in 40 hours at minimum wage than in one day as an escort. Gilbert also craved the spotlight and aspired to be a professional singer, though she used her relative economic power as a means to reconnect with her family. Her date with Brewer would pay for a birthday gift for her mother Mary, who later told a reporter she tried to talk Shannon out of working that night. Just having her there for a visit was present enough. Shortly before she was last seen, Gilbert placed a 23-minute 911 call while still at Brewer's home, reportedly screaming, "They're trying to kill me." I've tried to find the transcript of this call, but have failed to do so. As of January 2019, Suffolk County Police Department refused a judge's orders to release the 911 tape of Shannon Gilbert, telling journalists that doing so would jeopardize an ongoing investigation into the killer's identity. According to a deposition Brewer later gave, Gilbert, who had been diagnosed as bipolar but was not taking medication, became inexplicably unhinged, and Brewer enlisted Gilbert's driver, Michael Pack, to help end the date. At some point after placing the 911 call, Gilbert ran from Pack and Brewer into the darkness, banging on neighbors' doors and begging for help. By the time police arrived, beckoned by two Oak Beach residents who Gilbert encountered in her panicked frenzy, she was nowhere to be seen. Suffolk County Police Chief Stu Cameron stated it was the 10th of December 2010 when Detective John Mallier, accompanied by a canine in training, found skeletal remains along the northern edge of Ocean Parkway. Initially, investigators assumed Mallier had found Gilbert, but the deceased was identified as Melissa Barthelemy of the Bronx, a young woman who advertised escort services on Craigslist, and was last seen in July 2009. soon after. While Malia was searching the immediate vicinity for further evidence, he came upon the remains of three more missing persons: Maureen Brainard Barnes, Amber Costello, and Megan Waterman. All were petite 20-something women. All had worked as escorts. Because of their proximity to their burial ground to a secluded waterfront called Gilgo Beach, they became known as the Gilgo Four. Also, all of them were buried, partially covered in burlap sacks. The media was quick to jump on the case, and the quiet, almost desolate little island became flooded with people, as press swarmed the search area, hoping to catch a glimpse, a clue, even another body. The greater community of Long Island didn't feel like a breezy weekend getaway anymore. By the time Gilbert's body was discovered on the 13th of December 2011, in a marsh adjacent to Oak Beach, six more sets of remains had been found, for a total of 10, excluding Gilbert. Four further west on Ocean Parkway, one in nearby Nassau County, and a skull in Tobey Beach, which was matched to a set of legs found on Fire Island in 1996. Police suspect they are all victims of a serial killer, and five, including a mother and child, have yet to be identified. As of July 2019, police have still not apprehended any suspects. There may be one killer or multiple, working in tandem or just using the same dumping ground. It could be that the killer was simply clever, knowledgeable about the difficult terrain on the barrier island and the gaps in police presence in its secluded beaches. Some have suggested early stages of the police investigation were compromised by leadership, later charged with mishandling other cases, or by the fact that the leadership suddenly changed shortly after the discovery of Gilbert's body. Moreover, many of these questions have focused on the death of Gilbert, but she might not even have been a victim of the Long Island serial killer at all. And if her death was really just a tragic coincidence, it may be that all the efforts into solving her murder has been at the expense of finding the person responsible for killing the 10 other innocent victims found in the same area. It was the perfect place to hide a body, there along the quiet beach on Jones Beach Island, obscured by thick bramble. The location of the victims is a sign of a calculating killer, and also a killer familiar with the area. For example, the murdered child and the victim thought to be the child's mother were buried a distance away from each other, on opposite sides of the Nassau-Suffolk County line. Separating the mother and child was such an intentional act, said Joshua Zeman, a Long Island native who spent 4 years researching the Long Island serial killer case for the A&E series, The Killing Season. According to him, the killer was trying to confuse law enforcement and the medical examiners because he knew they would have to be investigated by separate counties. Besides the punishing terrain, the killer had another advantage, namely the victim's profession. Prostitutes often use burner phones to communicate with clients, making it hard to trace their movements. A burner phone is a mobile phone with an anonymous SIM card, usually prepaid with cash. It's interesting that America still have these available. Here in Norway, such phones have been illegal and unavailable to buy through ordinary means for at least the last 10 years. The reason for this is, of course, the way such a phone can facilitate various criminal acts. Prostitutes also tend to be secretive about their lives, like Melissa Bartholomew, who hadn't told her family she was working as an escort. Megan Waterman's family knew she was involved in sex work, but But the night she went missing, she called a family member from a hotel around midnight, saying she was going to bed. She left her cell phone and wallet behind. Costillo didn't bring a phone to her meeting. It has been suggested that the killer convinced her to leave her phone behind. But she'd used her roommate's phone to set up the date, so it's unclear if she had her own at the time. And Barthelemy must have had her phone because the man presumed to be her killer made repeated calls from her phone to her younger sister in the days after she disappeared. These calls were chilling calls, where she allowed the distraught sister to ask a few questions, which he didn't give any satisfying answers to, leading her on and giving her hope her sister was alive. In the final call, he admitted, or rather bragged, that her sister was dead and that he was the murderer. Since then, no further calls have been made. Beyond the choice of victims, there are indications that the killer may have knowingly made things harder on the police. The TV crime show Killing Season director Z-Man has in earlier interviews pointed out how the killer can be using the inadequacies of law enforcement against them. The examples of investigative weaknesses the killer might have used are databases that don't talk to each other, territorialism, and of course, the scourge that is public service bureaucracy. The Long Island serial killer's chosen dumping ground certainly posed challenges. The shoulder alongside Ocean Parkway may be narrow, but it is thick with hostile vegetation. Suffolk County Chief Cameron, who was the commanding officer of the Special Patrol Bureau at the time the Gilgo Four were discovered, describes treacherous conditions as the search for victims expanded, with increasing urgency as the days got shorter and colder, bringing the promise of snow. The area is full of brambles and briars, which rip and tear at your clothes and your skin. There's very dense poison ivy, and there's ticks that can cause a serious health hazard. The sand and sea also makes finding the bodies extra difficult, as the bodies easily get buried, with no trace of burial, just another sand dune. All in all, Cameron describes very challenging and difficult conditions the police were and are working under in the area. Cameron said in an interview he drove with some reporters along the Ocean Parkway shoulder, near where the cadaver dogs were searching with detectives, wanting to give them an idea of what investigators were facing. On one particular occasion, I stopped and let them out of the vehicle and said, "Canine is working right there." And they said, "I hear noise, but I don't see anything." "Well, exactly," Cameron said. "They were only a foot or two into the vegetation, yet they were completely invisible from the roadway shoulder." Before a medical examiner had completed a report on Gilbert's remains, the former Suffolk County Police Department Commissioner Richard Dormer told reporters that he believed Gilbert's death was an accident, not a homicide, a preemptive conclusion that angered Gilbert's family, who believed she had been murdered, and opened the police department to accusations that they weren't properly investigating her death. The Suffolk County Medical Examiner eventually ruled that Gilbert's cause of death was inconclusive. Gilbert's family hired an independent coroner to perform a follow-up autopsy. This time it was also inconclusive, but it did find indications that Gilbert may have been strangled. But aside from questions about her cause of death, there are several key differences between Gilbert's disappearance and that of the Gilgo Four. The bodies on Gilgo Beach were found buried, according to an interview Detective Mallaire gave to the New York Times in April 2011, wrapped in burlap sacks. while Gilbert was found partially exposed in the marsh, with some clothes and personal items found a few hundred yards away. In the absence of substantive updates from the Suffolk County Police Department, conspiracy theories have filled the silence. The Long Island serial killer case has become a popular topic on internet forums like WebSleuths, Reddit, and numerous Facebook groups devoted to the investigation. Among these groups of internet sleuths, there are strong but wildly varying opinions on who the killer might be and whether Gilbert was a victim. An amateur researcher named Robert Anderson obtained a copy of what he believes to be Gilbert's official autopsy report and delivered his findings in an August 2016 podcast called Rippercast. I quote, "The common sense narrative is that she fell in a muddy area, noting that the medical examiner had very little to work with. By the time Gilbert was discovered, not much remained beyond bones and hair. Still, we know more about Gilbert's disappearance and recovery than we do about any of the presumed serial killer victims. If a tenth of the effort that has been put into the analysis of the incident in Oak Beach had been applied to these other four, I think we'd be collectively further along in the narrative." End quote. But the disproportionate focus on Gilbert may have occurred because the events of the night have become so convoluted. In part, that was because there was simply more information. Gilbert was less secretive than the other four about where she was going and what she was doing the night she disappeared. She was the only one among them working with a driver, and she was the only one known to have made a 911 call. Her boyfriend, Alex Diaz, and her driver, Pack, were in contact with each other immediately after her disappearance and teamed up to look for her. Unlike the friends and families of the Gilgo Four, people in Shannon Gilbert's life knew where she went for her final date. Like three of the families of the Gilgo Four, Gilbert's family filed a missing person report. But law enforcement wasn't able to connect the dots until it was too late.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Us Norwegians are not exactly known for being overly social. And during winter here in Norway, seeing other people is a downright rarity. But we still need other people. We are humans, after all. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Everyone needs someone to talk to, even psychopaths, even your humble host. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/serial killer today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/serial killer.
according to the excellent book Lost Girls, An Unsolved American Mystery by Robert Kolker, Shannon Gilbert dabbled in recreational drugs. She'd do a little cocaine if a client wanted to party, and sometimes sought out ecstasy on her own. Pack told Kolker she liked to drink, and both he and another driver who'd worked with Gilbert said that her moods could be unpredictable. Pack also said he saw Gilbert and Brewer leave in Brewer's car for about 15 minutes. When questioned about the nature of the errand during a deposition, Brewer pleaded the fifth. But Gilbert's family lawyer John Ray claims Brewer told him one-on-one that he and Gilbert had gone to a drugstore named CVS on the mainland. Pack told Kolker he wouldn't have been surprised if Gilbert was going to pick up drugs. But he also told a reporter in 2011 that Gilbert had asked him to go to CVS to buy lubricant and a deck of playing cards, and he refused. Perhaps the most distracting and confusing part of the story is the involvement of Dr. Peter Hackett, a local physician. In the years since her disappearance, Gilbert's family has honed in on him as the culprit in their daughter's death. They've accused him of encountering Gilbert after she ran off from the neighbors who called 911 and giving her drugs that contributed to her death. She was not acting rationally, former Suffolk County Chief of Detectives Dominic Varone said of Gilbert's final hours. She was demonstrating paranoid behavior in some kind of psychotic state. Hackett has consistently denied ever meeting Gilbert. In 2012, Shannon's family filed civil suit against Hackett, alleging that he administered medical care and drugs that caused her wrongful death. Gilbert's mother, Mary, claimed he called her a few days after Gilbert disappeared, saying he ran a home for quote-unquote wayward women and had taken her in for a brief period on the morning she was last seen, an accusation that Hackett has vehemently denied. Hackett also initially denied calling Gilbert's mother, though he later admitted that part of her claim was true, which phone records backed up. The civil suit hit a major hurdle in 2013, when a judge dismissed a large portion of the case, including all the counts for wrongful death. Internet sleuths, perplexed by the investigation, want to know why the police haven't been more transparent, particularly in regard to the 911 call Shannon Gilbert made the night she disappeared, which police have refused to release. If police are so sure that Gilbert wasn't a victim of the Long Island serial killer, the critics argue, what would be the harm in revealing the contents of the call? John Ray, the attorney for Gilbert's estate, finds the police's refusal suspicious. He believes the police investigation has been compromised, and the tapes, if they already haven't been destroyed, could reveal information damaging to the department. The public really has a right to know what is on those tapes, as well as Shannon's family, Ray said. It will generate witnesses who are in the public, who know what happened, and perhaps will come forward. As of July 2019, the transcript has still not been released by the police. In the summer of 2015, 6 full years since her disappearance, Shannon Gilbert was back in the news again. Her younger sister Sarah had stabbed her mother Mary to death. Gone was the key witness in the suit against Hackett, and one of the loudest critics of the police, who insisted until her death that her daughter's case should be investigated as a homicide. Ray is also defending Sarah Gilbert, who was diagnosed with schizophrenia and was hospitalized 10 times in the 3 years preceding her mother's murder. 2 months before she killed her mother, the younger Gilbert, who was earlier interviewed by the show 48 Hours about her sister's disappearance, was indicted on charges of child endangerment and aggravated animal cruelty for the slaying of a pit bull. She pleaded not guilty to Mary Gilbert's murder by reason of insanity. Through it all, the lawyer Ray has insisted that Hackett is somehow responsible for Gilbert's death. Yet, he acknowledges that an inherent problem we always had is establishing a direct causal relationship between Hackett's actions and Shannon's death, he said. Indeed, there has been no evidence to show that Hackett encountered Gilbert on the morning she disappeared, and Hackett has insisted that he called Mary Gilbert at urging of Diaz and Pack simply to offer his support. The Suffolk County Police Department is one of the country's biggest, but the county itself exists in something of a bubble. It's at the easternmost point of New York State, surrounded on 3 sides by water. In December 2011, just days after Gilbert's body was found on the Oak Beach Marsh, newly appointed County Executive Steve Ballone announced that James Burke, then Chief Investigator in the District Attorney's Office, would take over as Police Chief in January 2012. According to both Varone and former Assistant Chief of Patrol Patrick Cuff, they and 2 other department chiefs were told they would have to retire by the end of the month or be demoted to captain. Cuff was the only one to choose the lower-ranking position. As he was not financially ready to retire. I was hoping to stay in light of my expertise and involvement in the case, and was surprised to be let go so suddenly, said Varone, who claims he was not giving a debriefing with the incoming leadership on the Long Island serial killer case. Former Commissioner Dormer, who had already been planning on retiring at the end of 2011, agreed that, and I quote, "There was no transition within the police department. Burke never sat down with me and talked to me, and he didn't talk to Varone. It was probably the biggest homicide investigation in Suffolk County history. We were right in the middle of this," end quote. Burke, who became chief a year after the first bodies were discovered, had a long history with District Attorney Thomas Spota. The two first became acquainted when Burke, age 14, was a key witness for the prosecution in a brutal 1979 murder of a 13-year-old boy, John Pius, who died of suffocation after stones were shoved down his throat. Spota was one of the prosecuting attorneys on the trial, which put 4 teenagers behind bars. With little physical evidence to tie the young men to the killing, the convictions were based heavily on witness accounts and the confession by one of the accused, whose conviction was later thrown out. Years later, another of the 4 confessed to attempted manslaughter for his role in the killing. Attorney Frank Bress, who defended one of the young men in one of the case's many appeals, told a news site and magazine Vice he thought Burke's testimony was unreliable because he was a low-level burglar and drug dealer as a kid. Burke joined the SCPD several years later as a beat cop at age 21. A decade later, in the mid-1990s, he was subject to an internal investigation due to his romantic relationship with a convicted prostitute and drug offender, who reportedly had access to his police cruiser and his weapon. The investigation found that Burke was responsible for unbecoming conduct, but it does not appear that he was formally disciplined, though, according to an article in Newsday, he was passed over for a promotion as a result. A year after Burke took over as chief, SPOTUS office would shockingly decline an offer from the FBI to create a profile of the Long Island serial killer. Varone and Dormer both insist that while they were working the case, the FBI was very much involved, though Varone claims an official killer profile was not created even then. According to Varone, the district attorney's office didn't think it was a good idea. To be fair, creating such a profile does carry a risk. If a suspect is apprehended and put to trial, but does not meet all the criteria of an FBI profile, the defense can use that to their advantage. But, as with so many parts of the LISK case, the story continued to get more bizarre and unsettling. In February of 2016, Burke pleaded guilty to charges of assaulting and threatening a suspect, Christopher Loeb, who had been taken into custody without access to a lawyer after he stole a duffel bag from Burke's unlocked car, a bag that is believed to have contained pornography and sex toys belonging to Burke. According to the charges, he conspired with law enforcement witnesses to cover up the assault, reportedly intimidating members of his squad to keep silent. In November 2016, he was sentenced to 46 months in prison for the unlawful interrogation and abuse of a suspect. Burke never wanted us involved in this case because he knew we were investigating him, an anonymous federal source told the New York Post in 2015. Burke's reputation as a bully, his relationship with a prostitute, and the DA's block of the FBI's help with the LISK investigation have led to murmurings in web sleuth forums that Burke has something to hide in relation to the serial killer case, though most believe that any interference with the FBI's involvement had less to do with the LISK case than the case that has since put him behind bars. But Loeb was arrested on December 14th, 2012, and a federal probe into Burke's alleged misconduct began in 2013. He wasn't under investigation in connection to Loeb's arrest at the time a decision was made to refuse the FBI's support. Still, that doesn't mean he didn't expect an investigation was imminent. According to a memo written by two SCPD officers, District Attorney SPOTUS office made the call to decline an FBI profile on the Long Island serial killer right after the time that Loeb was arrested. Meanwhile, District Attorney SPOTUS faced allegations that his office was complicit in patterns of illegally tracking and strong-arming political adversaries into compliance. The details of the misconduct allegations are shocking. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone characterized the district attorney's office as a, quote-unquote, criminal enterprise, and called for SPOTUS resignation in early 2016. In October 2017, SPOTUS and an aide were indicted on charges of obstructing the investigation of James Burke for police brutality. As a result of this, SPOTUS resigned from office on the 10th of November, 2017. When a case has been open for a significant period of time, you have to step back and take a fresh look, said Commissioner Sini, who made clear his intentions to renew a focus on the Long Island serial killer investigation the day after Burke was indicted. In December 2015, Sini announced that he was bringing the FBI back in on the investigation. Sini said that by late 2016, there were two detectives working full-time on the case in complete cooperation with the FBI, which was by then conducting the killer's profile that SPOTUS rejected in 2012. Former Commissioner Dormer said he believes that SCPD's cooperation with the FBI on the LISK case ceased after Burke took over as chief of department. Kolker, author of Lost Girls, also believes that SCPD should have worked more closely with the FBI and sooner, and he believes the department's dithering was of great help to the person or people responsible for the murders. In an interview, Kolker said, and I quote, "The Suffolk County Police weren't prepared for the magnitude of this case, and the bigger it got, the more they seemed to retrench. They took several steps to downplay the case with the public. It's clear to me that if these victims came from a different social stratum, the police would have worked harder and faster." End quote. Back in late 2016, both Sini and Varone said they believe that the killer will eventually be found. However, as of July 2019, no suspects are singled out. No new evidence has been put forth, and the investigation seems to have halted. Due to the early mishandling of the case, there's no telling how much evidence may have slipped through the cracks and how many leads were not pursued. And whatever mistakes were made, the police have been working without a great deal of public support or trust. Law enforcement agents have been put in a position of repeatedly having to defend their own actions and the actions of several layers of predecessors. There have been many distractions, and in a painful irony, Gilbert's tragic death may have been one of them. And if Gilbert was harmed in some way by a person she met in Oak Beach that May morning, her case may too have suffered by way of perhaps too easy presumption of innocence granted to the people who crossed her path because they didn't fit the description of a serial killer. Gilbert's story and that of the Gilgo Four will forever be intertwined. But the connection between them may ultimately be one reason why there are still so many unanswered questions, and a killer still on the loose.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And so ends the story of the Long Island serial killer, at least for now. He is still on the loose, and any day another corpse might be found wrapped in burlap among the chilly sandy dunes of Long Island. I hope you enjoyed it, and please feel free to give a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, reddit.com/r/theskpodcast, or elsewhere podcast reviews can be found. Next week, I will bring to you a fresh new serial killer expose,
So, as they say in the land of radio, stay tuned. This podcast would not be possible if it had not been for my dear patrons who pledge their hard-earned money every month. There are especially a few of those patrons I would like to thank in person. These patrons are my 19 most loyal patrons. They have contributed for at least the last 28 episodes, and their names are Maud, Amber, Anne, Charlotte, Christina, Claudette, Evan, Jennifer, Joe, Lisbeth, Mickey, Philip, PJ, Sarah, Russell, Mark, Lisa, Cody, and Troy. You really help produce this show, and you have my deepest gratitude. Thank you. If you wish to join this exclusive club of TSK producers, go to theserialkillerpodcast.com/donate and pledge $15 or more to have your name read live on this show. Thank you. Good night and good luck.